This is The Big Picture on POTUS.
We are back. Thank you so much for listening wherever you are, wherever you may be. We really appreciate having you, and we really appreciate DeWardrick McNeil for taking time out in between getting ready to head over to China to share with us his analysis on these very tricky negotiations between the United States and China. And now what we want to do is we want to continue the conversation that started last week in the House of Representatives in the House Judiciary Committee, where there was a hearing on hate speech. But we're not going to actually have the conversation that you saw take place. There won't be a lot of Twitter moments that will be resent out afterwards. There will be no fireworks. This will actually be a substantive, engaging conversation between two experts on the issue. And what we want to do is find out what's really happening around this very important issue and what can be done and what is being done to combat that. And we have with us here in studio Nico Perino. He is Director of Communications with FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And he also hosts the podcast Free Speech Talk. You can tweet him at Nico Perino. No hate speech, please. And also we have with us on the line Yannick Rice Lamb. She's an award-winning journalist and author who is a professor at Howard University's Kathy Hughes School of Communication. Thanks so much, Yannick, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so, Nico, I got you right here in the studio. So you're actually where I consider ground zero. You're on college campuses where this fight is being waged. In fact, the Trump administration recently moved an executive order, I believe, yep. On this issue. Tell us what you're seeing in this around this issue of hate speech, particularly as it relates to college campuses, because I'm sure some of our listeners, when they think college campuses, you think like this is where these discussions actually should be taking place. But what's happening? Are we seeing restrictions on college campuses?
Yeah, increasing restrictions, actually, but they're different than the restrictions I was seeing when I first started doing this work about a decade ago. About a decade ago, most of the free speech violations you saw happen on college campuses were around administrators trying to protect their fiefdoms, cordoning off students into far and away free speech zones, preventing critical coverage in newspapers of administrative initiatives. And then around, I peg it to 2013, we saw something new happening. With the talk by Ray Kelly, the former New York Police Department commissioner at Brown University. He was giving a speech there. Students were upset with his stop and frisk policies. I'm a civil libertarian. I don't like those policies either. But instead of debating him, they shut down his speech. And since then, we've seen rising occasions of what we call the heckler's veto. We saw this, and it's often having to do with people who hold very controversial opinions or do controversial things. People like Milo Yiannopoulos, people mm-hmm. like Richard Spencer. They go to campuses and they're shut down. And those are the extreme examples. Those are the ones where you can kind of understand the tension on campus. But you also see it with people like Guy Benson. He is the founder of Town Hall. He goes to Brown University as well, something with Brown University. And students say that he's engaged in hate speech. And then you ask them why. And he says, well, he supports a capitalist economy and that has disproportionate effects on marginalized communities. Therefore, we can't allow him on campus. Now, he ultimately did speak, which is the good thing. But you're seeing the Overton window shift away from people like Richard Spencer and Milo Yiannopoulos toward what we saw today at Middlebury College, where Richard Legutko, who is a politician in the European Parliament, having his speech shut down because of intense opposition on campus.
And so, Yannick, you're actually on a college campus, and you're a professor of communications. What are you seeing, given that you know we're seeing a rise in hate speech, we're seeing a rise in shutting down speech? Is it that speech has just gotten more politicized, or are we actually seeing actual hate speech?
I think we're seeing actual hate speech, and we're seeing hurtful speech that may not be characterized as hate speech, but it still lays the groundwork for that. And our students are upset when they hear it. They're upset when they hear about reports of nooses, different places, or people wearing blackface, or people doing more than that and harming people. At the same time, they're open to discussing some of the issues, which I think is really important in trying to ease some of the things that have been going on.
So when we, okay, because I guess we need to maybe break down this idea of speech, because you just mentioned blackface and nooses, which to me seems to be an action that I would characterize not as speech, but something else. Is that what we would actually characterize, or is that actually lumped in with actual hate speech?
Well, they're characterized as hate incidents.
Okay.
So there's hate speech, there's hate crime, there's hate incidents, and there's things leading up to it. So I think all those things are not helpful, and all of those things place people in harm's way.
And so, Nico, you're on the college campuses. You're on ground zero on this issue of hate speech. And so when we look at hate speech, are we looking at actual speech coming from like a Guy Benson, or is it the fact that we're simply shutting down people from actually being able to spew hate? And so should we allow people whose rhetoric may seem to be inflammatory, should they have the right to continue to inflame?
I guess the question is, what do you think a campus should be? Is it a marketplace of ideas? And if it is a marketplace of ideas, you want a diversity of opinion. But then you get to your good question. We talk about instances of nooses on campus or blackface on campus. And those are the more challenging questions because they don't really add to the marketplace of ideas. But then you also have to ask, well, what are the policies the university is going to put in place in order to get rid of those things that don't really contribute to the marketplace of ideas? And that's where the challenge is, because writing hate speech codes is hard. As we've seen in France, for example, where their hate speech codes are used to shut down and in some cases imprison people who are critical of the state of Israel. We see it on college campuses where hate speech codes are written, and they have a tendency to backfire and actually punish the people that the hate speech codes are supposed to protect. I mean, this debate goes all the way back to the 1980s when University of Michigan instituted its first hate speech code to respond to hateful incidents on its campus. And what ended up happening? Well, the first four people prosecuted under that code happened to be people of color. And those were precisely the people the codes were meant to protect. And Nadine Strawson at the ACLU talks about this all the time. She's like, in principle, hate speech codes make sense, but I haven't been able to see someone write them in a way that it wouldn't have unintended consequences. So, I come from an old school tradition of civil liberties defense that was kind of pioneered by the ACLU and people like John Lewis, who talks about how the civil rights movement would have been a bird without wings without free speech. Hosea Williams, who was a Martin Luther King's field general, as he put it, who organized many of his marches, said, I don't want to take the Ku Klux Klan off TV today. Like, there was a discussion in the early 90s about should they be able to buy advertisements on TV. And Hosea Williams was of the opinion that yes, because if they're not allowed to buy advertisements, the same justification will be able to be used against the NAACP, my organization, to take me off TV, because who has the political power in the South?
Mm-hmm.
Not the people who would sympathize with me.
Right. And so we've seen, particularly recently, if you look at the Twitter feud back and forth between President Donald Trump and Ilhan Omar, many are now saying that much of the language, the rhetoric in that tweet was inflammatory. The Speaker of the House is now beefing up security. There's this issue about this discussion going on about anti-Semitism. To you, Yannick, is that an issue of hate speech, or is it that we're grappling with a discussion, a conversation around issues where the public may be moving in a different direction than, say, where we were 20 years ago or 30 years ago?
It's a little bit of all of that, and part of it is that some of the things that have been festering below the surface are coming up, and a lot of them, frankly, have been fueled by the last presidential election, so where people feel comfortable saying things that they may have kept silent on in the past. So, and we can see that there's been an increase in that in terms of the speech, in terms of the incidents, and also in terms of the crime. But that needs to be addressed, and people need to talk more. People need to respect each other more. People need to not be afraid of each other, because some of it stems from fear, and some of it stems from, you know, wanting to push yourself and your agenda forward at the expense of others, and at the expense of their physical health as well.
We're having this amazing conversation around hate speech, and we have with us on the line Yannick Rice Lamb. She's a professor at Howard University in the School of Communication, and Nico Perino is here in studio. He is director of communications with FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. And so let's stop there, because Nico, you're on the college campuses where this is supposed to be the marketplace of ideas for ideas, but. And even in our politics, we're seeing increased polarization, and of course that line is being blurred now. And so, and I want to throw this question out to both of you, and Nico, I'd like you to answer it first. Are we seeing the boundaries being moved on what is and how hate speech is actually defined? And is the line moving? Is it moving forward or is it moving backward? So are we less receptive to the idea of speech that maybe 20 years ago was considered just regular speech, but now it may be considered hate speech? Or are we more open to this idea of actually pushing the boundaries on the conversations that we can and should be having?
Well, I think you pinpointed the important question there, that the boundaries keep shifting as for what is or isn't hate speech, and we're constantly debating what is or isn't hate speech. So the problem is with writing a law or a code that would restrict it is that everyone will bring their own definition to it. You talk about Ilhan Omar, her tweet about the Jewish lobby and its effect in Congress. Now, that might be anti-Semitic to some. It very well could be. I'm not an expert on the issue. But I also know that Democrats are very weary of money in politics and the influence that lobbyist groups have. Mm-hmm. And so can you talk about money in politics and lobbyist groups in every other context except the context of the state of Israel? Because then what you'd bring a negative connotation to it? I don't know. But to have a code or a law, as you're kind of doing on college campuses, that tries to pinpoint right now what the definition of hate speech is going to be, is going to prevent us from having those conversations. It's like breaking the thermometer. You might no longer know what the temperature is because you've censored everyone or because you've broken the thermometer, but that doesn't make the underlying problem go away. It doesn't change the temperature, so to speak. So we need to have these conversations in public. And the professor makes a great point. I think there is a lack of goodwill. There's a lack of presumption of goodwill. And right now we're bringing into our national dialogue this idea where our worst possible motives are only possible motives. So, you know, you're not looking for the most charitable interpretation of someone's argument, but the least charitable interpretation of their argument, and then blasting it off on Twitter.
But even if you, and I'm going to come to you, Yannick, but even if you do identify the least charitable part of their argument, okay, so what?
Yeah, and then let's have a debate about it. So this case at Middlebury College over in Massachusetts with Ryszard Legutko, he's part of the ruling party there in Poland. He has said some terrible things in the past about gay people and people of color, but he's also part of the ruling party in Poland. And the idea that the only people you can hear from on campus are the people who are critical of him is to not give you a good sense of the actual argument and how best it is to refute it. There's this great op-ed that was written at coming back to Brown University by this guy, Ken Miller, who saw the leader of the Nazi Party in America speak in the 1960s, and that really brought into him the face of fascism, and he fought it the rest of his life. I mean, you have to face your enemies in order to understand them and therefore defeat them. And Bernie Sanders talks about this. Barack Obama talked about it eloquently during his presidency. But it is falling out of favor with some of the new school progressives and conservatives, for that matter.
And so, Yannick, let's go to you. I want to get your thoughts. Are the lines moving? And if they are moving, are they moving in a good or bad way in terms of how we characterize hate speech and actually how we combat it?
I don't think it's moving in a good way because there's so much of it. And people do have a lot of fear about what can happen. Because when you have arguments, when you're being negative, negative language, negative incidents can lead to real harm. You know, people can be injured. People can actually die. So it's a real concern if you're on the receiving end of this. If you hear it, if you see it in terms of graffiti, you know, all kind of different ways. I saw something about a man who worked at the airport, and his name was Muhammad, and he started wearing a badge that said John because he didn't want to have to deal with, you know, things like that at work. So people shouldn't have to go that far. But there needs to be more dialogue about it, and there needs to be more recognition of it. And people also need to kind of look at themselves and also think about how they're raising, how is this influencing young people, too, in terms of how they're going to grow up, but also how they're dealing with each other, too, because it also leads to bullying among younger people.
And so on your college campus, Yannick, because you're at Howard University here in Washington, D.C., I would imagine that you all bring controversial people on campus all the time for lectures, for speaking engagements. I remember, in fact, you all had James Comey there not long after he was fired from the FBI. How do you all engage and how do you all grapple with this issue in terms of speech, in terms of what is actually being said on the campus, and for any pushback that you might get as a result of it?
Well, James Comey, I guess, is a good example. So when he spoke at one of our convocations, some students did protest in the middle of his speech and walk out of the auditorium. However, there were a lot of other situations where he engaged in dialogue with students, and they spoke a lot about a lot of different issues because he was kind of here for pretty much a year. So there were other situations where he was able to talk honestly with people, and they were able to challenge him on different things, and he could respond to that. So we have, you know, even though we're a predominantly black campus, we do have students and faculty here and staff of all backgrounds. From around the world. It's a very global campus. And people interact and they talk honestly about a lot of different things.
Sounds like utopia.
I don't know. I wouldn't say utopia because sometimes we do have people who intentionally come on campus to start things as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know what? We've got to take a quick break. So we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to finish this conversation around this issue of hate speech with our great panel. Don't go away. This is The Big Picture.
This is POTUS, SiriusXM Channel 124. Politics lives here. This is The Big Picture on POTUS.
We are back. Thank you so much for being with us. I am Eric Hamm filling in for Olivier Knox, and we're certainly glad to have you with us. And we are having this fascinating conversation around hate speech, and we have with us Yannick Rice Lamb. She's an award-winning journalist and author and who is a professor at Howard University's Kathy Hughes School of Communication. And with me in studio is Nico Perino. He's director of communications with FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and in Education. And you can tweet him at Nico Perino. So in just a short amount of time that I have left, I want to hear from you both on where do we go from here. So, Nico, again, you are focusing on what I think is ground zero, and that's college campuses. We know that the White House, the Trump administration, is engaged on this issue of speech. And so tell us, where are we going from here? What do you see in the weeks, months, years ahead on this issue?
Well, if you had asked me 3 months ago whether the situation for free speech on campus was getting better, I would have said yes. 2017, we saw violence at places like the University of California, Berkeley, Claremont McKenna College, Middlebury College, and those waned in 2018. But then, just like in the past 30 days, things have gotten a little bit more hectic. And we've started to see the violence that I saw in 2017 come back to the fore. Like at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, a conservative commentator from Ben Shapiro's website was speaking on campus and someone sprayed him with a chemical that was meant to imitate bleach. Didn't shut down his speech. He ended up keep going, but you didn't see the same thing at the University of Columbia where they were set to do a panel on Turkey, and the Turkish government actually reached out to the administration to shut it down. You also saw a case at Beloit College and at the University of Wisconsin, or in Wisconsin, excuse me, where, ironically enough, Betsy DeVos's brother was set to give a speech. He's the founder of Blackwater, mm-hmm. and students stacked chairs on his stage, prevented him from speaking, I guess if you want to get the federal government off your back, you probably don't go after the education secretary's brother.
Right.
But so we've seen a lot of that, and it keeps going on. Harvard, the president was shut down, deplatformed. We also saw at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia with Camille Paglia, a feminist scholar, someone pulled the fire alarm on her. So it's getting worse, in my opinion, the last 30 days. Whether this is a blip in the radar and the trend, I don't know. School's coming to an end here in a couple of weeks. I guess we'll have to wait till the fall semester.
The students are restless. Yannick, any final thoughts?
I think that kind of people have to leave from where they are and really try to address some of these issues about how we view people who don't look like us. And, you know, people always talk about celebrating differences, but recognizing those differences, even if you don't celebrate them, and, you know, not saying things like you don't see color or, you know, because that means you don't see me, you don't recognize me. But I think, you know, a lot of it is respect, and a lot of it is kind of also educating yourself, too, because there's a lot of stereotypes, there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot of fear about changing demographics and things like that. And I don't think it has to be that way. But I think people have to listen more and at least try to have more dialogue, but also understand that these are very real issues and people really do feel threatened and in harm's way.
We've got to leave it there. Thanks so much for our wonderful panel, Yannick Rice-Lamb at the Howard University School of Communications and Nico Perino, Director of Communications with FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. You can tweet Nico at Nico Perino. We really appreciate both of you for being here, sharing with us on this very important topic.
Thanks, Eric.
And
thanks
now,
for having us.
You bet.